Oh, yeah, we're live from what was the frozen tundra here the other day? 7 degrees on Tuesday. Wednesday was 9 degrees. Today it's mid-50s. No snow. That's the best thing about New York when we get a dumping of snow. And like 2 or 3 days later, warms up, you get the rain, just gives the city a nice bath. And New York City is always in need for a good bath, right? Hey, my name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Happy Friday Eve to you. 2 minutes after the hour, Eastern Standard Time, no matter where you're calling from. Love to have you check in with us. 888-874-4888. Got a great show as always. Going to jump into it. We have an artist who paints with many, many aspects of her senses except her sight.
There are many people that ask me, how can I paint when I'm blind? And my answer to them is that there are many people that can see but don't have a vision. I try to put my vision and my feeling on canvas.
That's the voice of Laura Maddens, and we'll meet her in a few minutes. Laura is just incredible. She's an abstract painter. She was visually impaired for many, many years, lost her vision entirely in 2007, and has been doing incredible paintings. I mean, wait till you hear her. She's got an incredible personality story of overcoming adversity, resiliency, and basically a story of reinvention. And taking the loss of a sense, a major sense, sight, and not limiting her versus sitting on the sidelines of life, which she did for a little while, which is understandable. But now since she really kind of grasped what she has to give herself and people in this world, and she's catapulted herself into museums in the world all over, in Amsterdam, where she lives, in the Netherlands, and also in Los Angeles. And we look forward to having her on the show in a few minutes. So I just want to say that last Thursday, 2 weeks ago, I had a gentleman on the show, Mike Ladone. He's the president of Disability Pride New York City. And there was a concert last Thursday, Legends of Jazz, which we spoke about again 2 weeks ago. And there was about 22-plus jazz icons there. And I just want to report back to you that the show was phenomenal. The fact that you can get so many jazz icons, greats, living legends together under one roof for one single cause, to raise awareness and money, of course. It wasn't a cheap ticket, but it goes to the production of their parade, Disability Pride Parade, which I believe is June 7th in 2017 this year. It takes a lot of money. It's about $100,000 to put on a parade in New York City of this caliber. And it was just an incredible night on every level. The fact that camaraderie for people coming together to not only share their love of music, jazz in particular, but to really the overall arched message of let's make it possible for people with disabilities to have a day of celebration and to embrace who they are, what they can do, and what they will be able to do in days ahead. So a big thanks to Mike Ladone and his staff for putting together a great event. I took a buddy of mine, Paresh, and both of us were in awe. The 3-hour-plus concert, really incredible. So if you didn't get a chance to see it this year, I'll bring it to your attention next year. But the Disability Pride New York City Parade is an incredible event that you can check out. And it's disabilitypridenyc.org, disabilitypridenyc.org. So I moved my mom recently, and I mentioned to her, you guys, not too long ago, because I did a segment kind of on resiliency, and it's never too late for change. And it was a good topic, and I think certainly relevant for the new year 2017. And I wanted to bring something else to your attention, because when I was unearthing different documents, old pictures, etc., I found something that I don't believe was ever brought to my attention. Certainly, I knew it was done, but I never knew the results. Certainly, I don't think my eyes ever crossed the lines of this page. Basically, is an assessment that was done when I was a junior in high school, commissioned by the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. So essentially what I can assume is that I asked for funding for college when I was a junior, or they basically thought I was on the career path of college to go into a 4-year school. And so that, I guess they want to find out exactly what my strengths were and what my weaknesses were. I could have told them what my strengths were, not too many back then, a few more now, but my weaknesses were basically I can't read the goddamn chalkboard. It takes me longer to read textbooks. I don't do well academically. I'm a C, maybe B minus student. I'll get an A in woodshop and gym. That's it in a nutshell. Big personality. Well, sort of big back then for a high school student. So anyway, I had to go see a psychologist. So this was kind of, it was kind of shocking on many levels. So here I am in my mother's kitchen. My sister says to me, oh, actually it was my mother. Oh, look what I found. I thought you'd be interested in reading this. And I'm looking at this. And ironically, very ironically, that I didn't have my cheap reading glasses, the magnifiers that I have on right now, or my pocket magnifier, which I always use and always have in my pocket every day. I'd rather leave my wallet home in the morning than go out with my pocket magnifier. But that particular day, I did not have my pocket magnifier. So here I am. I'm handed this multiple-page report about me being a junior in high school and essentially all my shortcomings. It was very, very odd. So it was basically an IQ assessment. Personality, my math skills, my verbal skills, and Mark Farrell in a whole, in a macro sense. And I was looking at this thing as much as I could read and interpret it because it was kind of small print actually when it was actually typed. And I was like, wow, this is just so wrong on many levels. Number one, that my abilities were confined to multiple pages and given numbers reflective of capabilities or limitations, which, you know, everybody has. But to really be, and I understand, hey, everyone experiences tests in life, et cetera, SATs, PSATs, MCATs, LSATs, whatever the case is. But when you're at a critical junction in your life, such as a junior in high school, and you have a disability, and they're basically assessing your future potential, essentially. Now, was I back then, Mark Farrell, a good candidate for financial backing from the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired? So I guess so, because they did have to, or they did grant me, after I met a boardroom of people, and I actually was pretty confident going in there. I remember this like it was yesterday. I remember walking out. And the guy who was sort of my counselor at the time at the New Jersey Commission for the Blind said, wow, you slayed them. And, you know, I just was myself. It wasn't like I had to take a test. I guess I talk about my weaknesses, but I more importantly talked about my goal. You know, I guess it's kind of rare back then and maybe even nowadays to have a clear career path when you're a junior or going into your senior year in high school. But I certainly did. But going back to this document, it kind of was, yeah, kind of like rattled me to the bones a little bit because, you know, again, all these different hurdles I had, but then I had an epiphany. It wasn't until later that night, actually when I got home, I said to my wife, told her what it was, and she grabbed it from me. She goes, I said, no, we were going out to dinner that night. Don't read this. She's like, why? I said, because you're going to get really disenchanted if you read this. She goes, what do you mean? I said, because you're not my number one supporter. So if this is going to impact me emotionally and maybe set me back a little bit, I think it's going to have the same impact on you. And she agreed, but of course, at the same time, she was torn because she really wanted to find out what it said and how incorrect it was. So I actually took it and stuffed it away because we had a babysitter coming over and I didn't want her to read this because she'd be like, oh my God. So anyway, I mean, it said basically a lot of good characteristic traits. I was a hard worker. I love working with my hands. It seemed like I was an affable, gung-ho individual who was certainly not taking my disability lightly. I was acknowledging it, but didn't certainly harp on it. And I'm going to bring this in, and I will post this on PRN.fm on the Insight page at a later date. I'm actually going to use this because this is the epiphany I had. I said to myself, wow, this is really good example of how we cannot allow ourselves to be sized up. I mean, never let anyone, anything or words, anyone's assessment or opinion impact you. I mean, my mantra is my difference makes me stronger, right? My difference makes me stronger. And we should embrace that. But at the same time, I mean, you know, this is my personality. And not everybody can be that strong. So it makes me think about, you know, what if this was somebody who didn't have the same, you know, charisma or the backbone as I do? You know, would that really set them back? Or maybe a parent wouldn't allow them to see it. And possibly my mother didn't. And I don't remember seeing it. I'm sure my mother said, you know, you maybe didn't do that well, you know, in the math part and the intelligent quotient, et cetera. But you know, you're a good person and, you know, we're going to get some money from the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired so you can pursue your dream to become a radio talk show host or whatever you want to become back then, a DJ, et cetera. And that's what I did. So it's very interesting to look back at something that was taken in 1983. So I've had a few years to prove them wrong. And I'm happy with myself that I have. And certainly not that I live my life to prove anyone wrong. I like to prove myself correct because that's what's most important. But imagine seeing a document that kind of sizes you up. How disturbing that would be, especially when, I mean, because it's not positive, right? I mean, you know, we all want to read something, not on Facebook by all means, about something positive about ourselves. But this was the contrary. But the epiphany is, okay, here I am all these years later, you know, as a person who's a New York City broadcaster on a progressive radio network and multiple other New York City terrestrial FM stations, you know, a nice resume that I'm proud of. That in 3 hours will get me a subway ride, right? Big deal. But anyway, it's not like I've been a failure. And also the fact that I've reinvented myself about 5 years ago, where I go out and share my stories of overcoming adversity, drug and alcohol use, being bullied, being resilient, my mental illness, losing a brother to suicide, my experiences of suicidal ideation, of panic attacks, extreme anxiety, all those things that I put out there for the betterment, the improvement of people's lives so they don't have to live unnecessarily without help, without the proper education, edification of what is out there, what is possible for someone who's suffering and or experiencing or knows somebody who's can love and support somebody. So those are a lot of important, significant variables and aspects of my characteristic that are good things. So now if I have this piece of paper, this document, this assessment of Mark Farrell, then this is a great prop because I can say, look, to audiences, this is what was apparently what I was about when I was a junior in high school, but how incorrect this is. And again, we're going to do a whole segment on this in the upcoming weeks, and I'll post the entire thing online. And you'll be surprised. Maybe you won't. You'll be interested to see how maybe it compares to possibly how you were at that age if you have a disability. And certainly it doesn't matter if you have a disability or not, because it's just a assessment of who I was at that age and my potential. And so in a nutshell, that, you know, I went on to college. I got accepted on a probationary status the first semester because academically I wasn't that strong. And if I didn't, I forget the exact requirement, but if I didn't receive like a 2.5 average the first semester, I would have to withdraw from school. And I surpassed that and there was no problem. I mean, I had to work my tail off on college just like everybody does, but I had to work even harder just to maintain average grades. So because of my vision and, you know, disability and navigating, college courses, et cetera. So, but it was great that, again, going back, I felt like someone just dropped a house on my chest. Here I was reading about a person, you know, in their teens, 16 years of age, who had a lot of hurdles, a lot to overcome. And I'm sure my mother was probably taken aback when she read this assessment from the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And maybe she had her doubts of where I could go in life. Could I hang in four-year college? Could I be accepted into a four-year school? And what would my life trajectory be? So it's very, very interesting when you look at it in a cumulative sense, because all these years have transpired, and here I am. This became unearthed. And I'm really glad that she found this and shared it with me, because I'm sure when I read it again, I have not actually read the thing entirely, because there's still a piece of me that gets a little bit, simply put, pissed off, because I feel like the system let me down. And we'll go into this in great detail, in greater depth, when we talk about the entire segment in a week or two. But the reality is, it's only up to us. And as parents and as friends, as a you name it, to help people, support people, to be there for them. So I thought you'd appreciate that, because it's very interesting how, you know, things can be sized up. But, you know, I attribute it to my difference makes me stronger. All those things, all those check marks that, you know, I wasn't proficient in this and I needed help in this area. My IQ wasn't that strong. Well, guess what? I've grown. I've been educated. I've succeeded in my endeavors in life, and I have many, many, many more to go. So right before we bring on our first guest today, Laura Maddins, I want to touch to you very quickly about the Golden Globes the other night, because Meryl Streep, who I think is a dear actress and a dear person and a gift to mankind. Okay, maybe a little oversaid there, but the fact is that she's getting a lot of flack for bringing up what Trump ridiculed the New York Times reporter Serge Kovaleski, a reporter who is a fine writer with a disability. And there's a lot of backlash. I'd say the majority of people in Hollywood and everywhere else have embraced her words of support for this incredible reporter and for anyone else who's doing what they love in life with a disability or not. But the fact is that our president-elect made fun of him on a national platform. Not only did he make fun of him verbally in terms of just saying what this person asked and how he said it, but he physically mimicked, pantomimed, and actually articulated what he said. And that's just inexcusable on every single level. It's deplorable. It's just, again, unthinkable. But it was done in true Trump fashion. And I think she took the high road with educating everybody with what is about to happen. We're quite aware of what is ahead of us. We have no idea how it's going to play out, but it's going to be a scary time. And I'm not going to belabor this point because there's enough sources out there, and that's not exactly what I'm about. But when it touches something close to my heart in terms of the disability community as an advocate for people with disabilities, then I get involved, because I definitely stay abreast of politics, and I think it's very, very important, because what's the old statement? Politics are personal, and personal or politics, something like that. But yes, it's very, very true. You take it dear to the heart. And as a matter of fact, we've never been living in a time, more so in history, where an incoming president can really change the trajectory and individual lives that we live here in the United States of America. The POTUS, Donald Trump, January 20th. Woof, scary thought. The show is Insight. Thanks for listening this Thursday and every Thursday. My name is Mark Farrell. You can always check in at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I came across my guest, Laura Maddins, a couple years ago. I don't remember exactly how, but of course, I spent a lot of time online looking for things of interest for the show, and things of, obviously, I'm always speaking at different colleges and high schools, et cetera, on the vital topics I mentioned before. And anyway, I came across this great website, Abled.com. And I started reading about Laura Maddins, the co-creator of that website. And she was visually impaired for 22 years, and she lost her sight entirely in 2007, but that has not limited her at all. For painting a canvas black and putting paint on her fingers and making incredible, stellar, and absolutely beautiful art. Laura Maddins, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, you sound pretty good for coming in crystal clear from Holland.
That's good, yes. Yes. And the name is actually Meddens.
Did I say
Meddens? Yes.
Did I say Maddens?
You did.
Oh, my apologies. I start the interview with a little error there. Laura, it's a real pleasure. I have looked at your art online.
Thank you.
And it takes me, I appreciate art. I'm not one to go to the museum and explore new art. But I always, when I see art, I always take the time to appreciate it, and whether it affects me or not, give it a chance. And instinctively and almost instantly, your art leapt out of me, and I felt the weightlessness of it, the motion of it, the serenity, the tranquility, and just the overall magic of it. And it is so appealing.
Thank you. Yes.
So please go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. I just wanted to mention that I do it from my mind because I don't see anymore. And it's really nice to be able to see the things and then just put them down on canvas. And it makes it extraordinary.
As you put it, it's your mind's eye. You had your vision for
Absolutely.
many years. And you were, I imagine, just like the beauty of the brain and long-term memory is that you have these pockets of great memories, whether and they're connected, I'm sure, to visual sense. And probably throughout, you know, the last 10 years or so, when you have lost your vision, you're constantly reminded of things in your mind through possibly everyday life or experiences or vacations through different senses and memories that inspire you for different paintings.
That's true. Yes. Yes.
So talk about, I mean, I know you had a history of working with pottery, and did you dabble in painting when you were younger?
I did. When I was younger, I could, actually look at things and then put them on paper. That was very different than now. But yes, I did do a lot of artwork when I was younger, yes.
So tell me about the first time that you, after losing your vision, that you said to yourself, you know what, I'm going to give this a try. And how did it go?
That was in 2015, and I was very inspired to put some clouds on a canvas. And so I did that, and then I left the painting for quite some time. And I got some inspiration, and I came back to it. And that's the first painting that I did. That was Origin. And the that one I finished, and you see people tell me what they see, and it's very nice to notice if you have 10 people looking at them, that 8 people say the same thing, of birds flying up with a red ribbon. And so that was really nice to me. So that was the reason they could see a frog jump off a cliff, which was nice too. So all these things that I couldn't see were happening, and that made it very interesting. So the inner mind of the person that looks, and the inner mind of my mind. So that was, it was very good to do that. That was 2015, June of 2015.
What's most fascinating, Laura, and there's many facets of what you do that are fascinating, is that from your mind's eye in your brain, through your finger, nothing gets lost in translation, to have 8 out of 10 people sit there and recite to you what you saw in your mind.
Yes, yes.
So tell me about the process, Laura.
Tell me about, Mark, can you repeat that?
Sure. Tell me about the process in terms of even as simply as identifying the colors of paint in the tubes.
What I do is, what I do with the tubes is I mark them beforehand. So I know how much is in there, and then I cut a piece off the tube at the end, or I cut a bit of the paper off, and then I know exactly which color is what. And the funny thing is with these visualizations, they're not the normal visualizations like you would know when you go on the street and see a car or a tree. It's very different. It's usually it is a candle that's always in flame, and I see it as a soul, and it's always lighting, you know, lighting up with a little flame, and it's like a flame that blows in the wind, and actually there's a lot of colors behind it, and that makes it so clear what color candle I'm painting. And that's the second painting that I made, Tango, which was a white candle with a flame. And to me, this is just the love that goes around and a soul that you paint. It sounds very spiritual, which I am actually not really fond of, but I do see these things, and it's absolutely amazing. I see very bright colors, so it's sometimes black in the background, and you have a blue candle or a red one or a white one, and out of that come a lot of new things that people see. So the chorus of love, when you look at the bottom of the page, you see people see people. But to me, they were just little candles. And it's extraordinary what people see in them.
So it's interesting how you identify the colors of paint in your own unique way, which is awesome. But spatially, how you actually, I saw on your website, it seems that you actually count down. You have a way of determining where you were left off and where you want to pick up on, maybe with the same color or a different color. Discuss that, please.
I have a canvas in front of me, and this is usually quite big. I feel it, and then I see the visualization in my brain, and I just put that down as I see it in my brain. So the background is a color. And that's what I put on first, then let it dry. And then I spread it and feel where it should come, the object that I'm painting. Yes.
But in terms
that's
of
the way it goes.
In terms of knowing where you left off, because obviously you run out of paint, you have to get more paint out of the tube, put it in your hand, because it seems like the, is it called the palette? Your palette is more of that your hand, correct?
It usually is, yes. I put the paint in my my hand, and it depends on the painting as well. If I put it on the floor and walk around the painting, or I'm on my knees, and then I just focus where I've been, and I can feel it because it's wet. So I always know where I've been last, and I'm very into the painting at that moment and feel a lot of guidance as well when painting it. So I just put down what I feel and see in my mind. And with the celestial avalanche, one is, it was very clear to me, that visualization. And I put it in there, well, within, I think, a couple of hours, which was, just dries and it's finished. And very spectacular. The best paintings I made a little quicker than the ones that I leave alone for some time. So the best paintings are really when I come home, I've had an exciting day, I've been out in nature, and feel very happy, because I never paint when I'm down, never. I always paint when I'm very positive and happy. And that's the way I put it onto the canvas, yeah. It's just a matter of feeling and mixing and knowing what you're doing, because I do know what I'm doing. I have a visualization. I just copy that visualization on the canvas, and that makes it so interesting.
You're painting with a stream of consciousness.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
That's amazing, Laura. And going back to what you just said, if you have a painting and you put it aside for a while, I'm marveled by the fact that you can take out this painting, we'll call it painting X. We'll call it painting Mark.
Okay.
You take out painting Mark, and then you begin possibly where you left off. You can retain what you actually did maybe weeks or possibly months before on that particular canvas?
I can, because that's what you asked previously, and I didn't. I went in to another point. But yes, I do feel that, because I work quite thick with my paint. So I can always feel where I've left off. Yes, always.
Maybe where you left off, but how do you decipher the colors of where you left off?
I remember.
Really? That's amazing.
I do remember, yes.
That's amazing.
I do remember.
Did you amaze yourself with any of this, any aspect, especially when, and were you afraid and or kind of maybe not afraid, but not that confident in what the feedback would be when maybe you showed your daughters or anyone else in your life close to you?
Well, actually, I just did it to start with for a hobby. And my daughter came in and she said to me, "Mom, that painting is for me. And I said, why? It's not finished yet. Yes, it is, she said, because I can see two people dancing. And at that moment, I didn't know that, because I actually wanted to put on a candle, put a, on the canvas a candle. And that's tango, but it's a very, very nice painting. Everybody loves it. It's a very peaceful painting. And yes, I was amazed. So that was the first painting that I was amazed by. And the fact is that Gabriella, my daughter, she had the same taste as I did when she grew up. So I knew it was a good painting. And we used to, when we looked for a car, for example, she would say to me, no, Mum, that one's too this color, and I would know what she meant. So with the painting exactly the same, she tells me, she translates my mind, really, what she's seeing, and that helps a lot. So, yeah, that's really very nice. And then I was actually quite happy with that. But there was a very nice person from New York, New Jersey, actually, who looked at my paintings, Harry Simon, and he said to me, that painting is absolutely amazing. And he looked at some more, and I was very happy about that. And that's the reason I got my confidence as well, because he had a gallery himself, and he's gone to May now, but he was very happy with the results. So I was very confident after that as well. Not only my daughter, but more people.
So was that the turning point, Laura Meddens, about taking your hobby to a professional level?
Yes, because I got chosen by the SBK building in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam. From the 96 people, I got chosen, 10 people got chosen to be selected to hang their work in the building, which was very nice. And after that, I got chosen to go to the TAFAF in March, coming March, and also the Hermitage in Amsterdam. So I'm quite happy with that, yeah.
Was there any point where you had to kind of really mull this over? Because art is an expression of who you are and what you think and what your perspective of life and your inner self. And I said, you mentioned that you're not that spiritual, but was there any part of you that said, possibly considered, you know what, this is just something that's personal and I don't want to put it out for the world to see? Or was it the converse, where you wanted everyone to see and the beauty of your magic?
Yes, I think it's love is the most important thing in life, I think, and you hear a lot of trouble out there at the moment, and I think love is the most beautiful, energetic thing that you can receive and give. And but I'm not saying I'm not spiritual, but I don't like the word. I like to be inspired, and I think the spiritual word should be inspired by love. And but that's my meaning, and nobody other opinion, but that's my opinion. So I love the word love and inspiration, and that's a reason I like to let people enjoy my paintings. And so I do believe there's a lot out there that we don't know yet, and that we can work with the brains and that we have, and or the brain. And it's very, very easy when you don't have the possibility to see anymore, that your brain is very flexible and can do a lot more than you actually know. Just like brain, sound waves and brain waves, I think we can do a lot more.
You know, it's a very interesting time, Laura, because there, with assistive technology, a friend of the show named Michelle Spitz does a lot of narration for TV and movies for blind and visually impaired moviegoers and TV goers. And so the same thing can be said for museum goers and for lovers of art. Now people who are blind or visually impaired can have art interpreted. And so what better way to appreciate art from a person who experiences blindness for people who are blind or visually impaired to show that there are no limitations?
No, exactly. No, I agree. Yeah. No limitations at all.
How many paintings have you completed?
I think I am reaching 30, Yes, I think 30. 32, 33, yes. So it's quite a lot.
Does painting out weigh or give you way more satisfaction than pottery or anything else you've done in your life?
Well, this I can actually do completely by myself. And pottery is always, you need an oven, and this will dry, and it's ready to be shown. So, yes, I can do this by myself, and this is actually very nice, yes.
And I imagine you sound like a self-sufficient person, so you take a lot of pride in being independent, and why not? And to be able to paint, you know, 100% independently is even more rewarding.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, it is.
So who would have thought that we'd have a conversation, me being in New York City here and you being in Holland, and the word New Jersey would come up? But you got your first eye dog from the seeing eye in Morristown, New Jersey.
Absolutely. That was fantastic. Wagner, my favorite. Yeah, he was absolutely a gorgeous golden retriever, Wagner. And he unfortunately died because of he got lymph cancer and tick disease from the tropics in Curacao. And he died. But I've got a lovely dog now, and his name is Nugget. He's absolutely superb. And very, very happy with him, too. Yeah.
Just curious, it's a little bit of an aside from your artwork, but is the seeing eye so renowned that you came from Holland or Curacao because of its notoriety?
I think the seeing eye is absolutely amazing. And I came from Curacao because the Dutch people wouldn't give me a guide dog at that time, which I didn't understand. So I wrote a letter to the seeing eye, and they were so friendly to help me out. Like the Americans helped the Europeans in the Second World War, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you've led a very interesting life. You traveled a lot, lived in a lot of different locales, and growing up in Curacao. And talk about how the onset of your visual disability kind of began, because it started with an examination, correct?
It did. Yes, it did.
And
it's a long story, and actually it's too much to tell. But you can ask. I mean, it's no problem.
But essentially, what was the onset? At what age?
The age that I had problems with is 22 years ago now, and I'm 50 now.
You look great.
Thank you.
Those arms are in serious condition, my girl. On your website, I don't know what's more impressive.
The nice thing is, when you don't see yourself in the mirror anymore, you don't see the lines either, do you?
Oh, boy. But I'm telling you, your arms are, you are in shape, my dear. You love the outside. You love keeping fit. But it's just very interesting because you experience a lot in terms of misdiagnosis and inadequate treatments, and ultimately resulted in the loss of vision.
Yes, nearly, yes.
So for 22 years being visually impaired, how different was it to go psychologically from having some sight to blindness?
Well, before that, I could see 100%. I drove a car as well, studied at university. So I from the visually impairment, going to blind was a big thing. But now that I'm blind, I actually think it's nicer. It might sound ridiculous, but when I could see a little bit, I tried so hard to show the world that I could still see a little bit. And that was sometimes very tiring.
Mm.
And now that I'm blind, I just tell people I'm blind. And when I used to see a little bit and they would say to me, "You're blind," I would get very angry, because I would still tell them I can still see a little bit. I'm visually impaired. I'm not blind. But now that I am blind, I just tell them I'm blind. I don't see anymore. So because people tend to walk up to me and, don't realize that I can't see. And I have to really explain it to them and tell them I don't see anything. Okay. And then they're all of a sudden, they're very helpful, and they help quite well. Yes. When I'm in a shop looking for something, and even when I'm with Nugget, they don't realize, because the thing is, the difference in Holland, they walk with a cane as well, and I don't. I just walk with a nugget.
Was it in Curaçao where you were residing when you became blind and you experienced some awkwardness and maybe some pushback from the community?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Talk about that, please.
A lot. Well, people wouldn't let me into certain places, and because I had a guide dog, and they weren't used to that, you see, because they're used to having a dog for a people not coming in their house, so a guard dog and not a guide dog. So I had to teach the people and the children what the difference was, and they did eventually understand, but it took some time, and children eventually liked Wagner a lot, wanted to stroke him, and made them aware of what a dog can do and how a dog can help a blind person. So at that time, visually impaired still, but yes, it was necessary to educate the people there, because then they're more open to things that are new, yes.
Did you feel empowered when you had the ability to share something that you maybe initially thought was possibly a new weakness, but you can turn that around to become empowering, not only for yourself, but for others?
Yes, absolutely. I thought it was very, very nice to do, and very nice to see the enthusiastic people that would, you know, just want to listen and to know what was going on, yes.
When did you decide to begin a website for people with disabilities, abled.com?
In 2008, yes.
So before your blindness, obviously it was still important for you because you were experiencing what you were experiencing in Curaçao.
Yes, that was the reason. And what I thought was very disturbing was that a lot of people with a disability were put away. And to me, that was that wasn't done. That was shameful. So that's what the reason I wanted to do something about that. And it really worked. It did work, yes.
Do you attribute that lack of education and sensitivity just because you're living in Curaçao versus the Netherlands or right in Holland in a major city?
Well, yes, I think so. And I think it's a part of the culture as well, that people are ashamed if somebody has something. And that's very different in the Netherlands, because we see it the Netherlands are much more open to guide dogs and much more friendlier. And there's a big difference there. But I think Curaçao has developed. It's they understand a little more. I wouldn't say 100%, but they do understand a little more.
Laura Meddens is my guest. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Laura is an incredible painter who happens to be blind and the parent of two girls, I believe one in her late teens and one in her early 20s. So obviously a very important stage of parenting was when you were visually impaired and blind. How difficult was that?
Well, I actually have a son and a daughter.
Oh, son and daughter. My mistake.
No, Michael and Gabriella, their names are. And Michael is 20 and Gabriella is 19. It was difficult sometimes because you want to show how well you do it without seeing. You see, you're visually impaired and you don't want the children to fall or let anything happen. So I had to prove everybody around me that I could do it. And I did it. And it was a lovely time. It was lovely to have the children in Curaçao in the tropics. So they didn't need that much clothes as they would have done in the Netherlands. So it was always quite easy. Just put on a nappy and we would go for a swim. And I always taught my children to come to me after 10 minutes to tell me they were safe. But my ears started to work much better too, so I could hear them around me. When I couldn't hear them, I would get up and have a look where they were. But it was fun having the children, and it was nice to prove that I could do it, and I enjoyed it a lot, yes.
And I imagine very beneficial for yes. them to obviously not only help you, but to see how strong their mother was with a visual impairment, and to see that her life would not be shut down due to blindness.
No. I mean, absolutely not. I think it's actually, it might be very strange to say, but I think it's much more exciting now that I'm blind. It sounds, typical, because I didn't know there were so many things in my brain, and I don't like the word spiritual, but there is much more than we know when we see. And the only way to find out is not to see. So, to get something else, to understand that there's much more that we can do with our bodies and brains and everything around us. So it makes it interesting. And I am positive. I must say that if you're not positive and you become very depressive, it's not going to help you, because you won't grow. And in order to grow, you have to stand open for new things that will develop in your brain to be able to feel and connect with those beautiful things that are out there that you didn't know that were there to start with.
I have a mantra that my difference makes me stronger due to my visual impairment and all the other things that were brought on by myself and things that I didn't have control of, which so many of us don't have in life. For example, the fact that, you know, all the adversity you experience, and also domestic violence for yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
So that played a little bit of a role in your decline in vision, correct?
It did. Yes. The last 30% that I could still see. Yes.
So was that emotionally something that was made losing your vision even more difficult, or there's no way to actually even determine whether it was more difficult? It was just overall hard.
It was hard because the problem I had was that I still loved the man that I was married to 20 years, and that made it so difficult. I think if I wouldn't have done that, I would have just walked away and said, okay, that was that. But that was my problem, and I think that's the problem of most women that are hit by whoever that might be, that if you do care for somebody, it's very strange that that happens. So it took me some time to understand that, and but my vision, was just gone, and the pressure was kicked out of my eye. But now I say what I said before, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot.
And you've just been able to harness everything. And you mentioned how positive you are. It's evident in your paintings. It's evident in things you've accomplished, being visually impaired. You, I guess you packed up your bags in Curacao and went back to the Netherlands and got your degree. You really ramped yourself up on assistive technology with the assistance of friends and other people in your life. And you weren't going to take no for an answer.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true.
And even the founder and chairman of the Laura and Wagner Foundation. Correct. Your first dog, correct?
That was my first dog, mm-hmm. yes.
And now why do you have a foundation in your name and your first dog's name?
Because it opened my life to new things, and I could get out of the house, and before I couldn't, because in Curacao you don't have a lot of sidewalks. So where we were living at the time, we did, and I learned to walk with a cane first, and then I received Wagner, which was amazing. I could just leave with safely, because that was the main thing. I did leave with my other dogs, but they weren't guide dogs, so they would help me, but not in the way that Wagner would help me. So I was very happy about that, yes. And that's how the foundation started, yeah.
Laura Meddins, talk about the advocacy, the support system, and possibly the pushback that you would compare and contrast from Europe, being a person with a disability, versus I don't know how long you were in the United States for the seeing eye. Obviously, you've been here, I'm sure, numerous times. But what's your overall sense in terms of how people with disabilities are treated?
I think that when you are a traveler, like I was, I traveled with my parents quite a lot and became disabled in the tropics. And when I came back into the Netherlands, it was very hard for me to get funds and help, which I think is not correct, because I think when you have a certain status and you become blind, that you should get help wherever you are. And the difference between the Netherlands and America is that when I went to the Seeing Eye, I met a lot of people with a good education and well established, and I felt a lot of friends that were there that had established a lot, and that difference I haven't seen that much in the Netherlands. I know there's been a judge that's blind, so there are opportunities, but not as much as in America, I believe. I don't know if this is true, but I think for people that are blind and you're born here and you stay in the same place, you have a little more of a chance to get help than when you're a traveler like I was with my parents, and afterwards when I wanted to leave from the Netherlands to see more of the world. That gave me a lot of problems when I left my hometown. So, because I wasn't seen as one of the standard people, and so I didn't get a lot of help, which was sad and is still the case now. I get around because I can sometimes ask for a taxi, but I think in America, I'm not sure really how it works there. You can tell me more about that. But the Seeing Eye was absolutely fantastic. Mm. And the people that I met all had a possibility to study and finish their college degree. And I think that's the same in the Netherlands when you've been in the same place all your life. I think that's the big difference.
Certainly. Yeah. Laura, we're almost out of time, but finally I want to ask you, describe the feeling you get mentally, physically, when you're in the throes of painting, starting a painting, in the middle of a painting, or the completion of a painting. How does it make you feel?
Satisfied. I think that's the best word.
Satisfied. I thought I was going to hear the word elation, free.
Yeah, freedom is a part of that. Mm. But freedom is the best word you can think of for everybody, I think.
Sure.
Yes.
And,
yeah,
of course, one of your other favorite words is love.
Love, freedom, and love. Absolutely.
So, yes, of course, Laura Meddins, the Progressive Radio Network, where we're broadcasting live right now, is worldwide. Do you have upcoming exhibits you would like to plug?
Yes, well, everything is visible on my website. So it's the TEFAF, and that's in Maastricht, in the Netherlands, and also the Hermitage in Amsterdam. And if we really have travelers amongst the listeners, I'll be in the tropics in October in Curaçao.
Oh, I would love to visit you there.
Yes, that's lovely there. Yes.
Any possible trips or exhibits in Los Angeles?
I hope so, actually. I do hope so. But I'm waiting for an answer from the people over there. So who knows? I don't know. Yeah.
And
we'll see.
And finally, Laura, what would you say to anyone who is experiencing vision loss and or blindness that are new to this new chapter in their life?
The most important thing to stay positive, although it's very hard at the time, there's always new things that will come out of it. And if you have that attitude and you're strong and you get help from friends, because that's very important to have help from friends and people that love you, that will make it okay. That will really help. And I've had a lot of that around me, and a lot of people that, you know, have the interest to help, and then you'll get through it. You'll be able to make it and see the nice importance of experiencing everything that you've experienced. Yeah.
And we'll leave it right there with sage advice from Laura Meddins. Laura Meddins' artwork is available on her website. Check it out, Laura, MEDDENS.com. Correct, Laura?
Yes, correct.
And check out her website. She's a co-founder of Abled, ABLED.com, ABLED.com, for a lot of great shared networks about all types of disabilities. And also you can check her out, your founder and chairman of the Laura and Wagner Foundation. What's the website for that?
That's abled.com and lauraandwagner.com.
Oh, lauraandwagner.com. And please, yeah, give a huge hello and a doggy treat to Nugget.
I will. Thank you, Mark.
Laura, keep up all the great work.
Thank you.
My name is Mark Farrell. This has been Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. If you missed any part of this live interview with Laura Meddins and or earlier portion of the interview, check out the Insight page on the Progressive Radio Network. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, corporation, or more, check out markfarrellmotivation.com. I speak about overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, mental health, drugs and alcohol, how to get in a lot of words with no time. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day!